Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're diving into a fascinating and, let's be honest, sometimes pretty perplexing area, reproductive technologies. Yeah. It's incredible how far science has come, but, well, with these advancements come some really profound moral questions.
Absolutely. It really pushes us to think deeply about what we value and how we apply those values in the face of new possibilities. You shared a lecture on Christian ethics with us, and our aim today is to really dig into the core ethical considerations surrounding these technologies, you know, as presented in that specific framework.
That's right. Yeah, you were looking for some clarity on the main ethical arguments being made in this lecture. So let's start by getting a clear picture of the technologies themselves. The lecture gives us an overview, so maybe you could walk us through what's being discussed.
Certainly. So the lecture begins by outlining several key methods. First, there's intrauterine insemination, or IUI. Mm-hmm. You might remember this being called artificial insemination in the past. Essentially, it involves the direct, artificial placement of sperm into a woman's uterus. Then we have gamete intrafallopian transfer, or GIFT. Now, in this procedure, multiple eggs are retrieved, and then both the eggs and the sperm are placed directly into the fallopian tubes, hoping fertilization will occur naturally within the body.
Okay, so with GIFT, fertilization happens inside the body, which is a key distinction from the next one. Mm-hmm. In vitro fertilization, or IVF, right? That's where things happen in the lab.
Precisely, yeah. With IVF, eggs are retrieved and fertilized by sperm in a laboratory setting. The resulting embryos are then transferred to the woman's uterus for implantation.
Right.
There's also zygote intrafallopian transfer, or ZIFT. In this case, the egg is fertilized in the lab, creating a zygote.
Okay.
Which is then immediately placed into the fallopian tubes. And finally, the lecture addresses surrogate motherhood.
Ah.
This is where a third woman carries a pregnancy to term. And this can involve either IUI or IVF. And the surrogate may or may not have a genetic connection to the child, depending on the specifics.
Wow. Okay. It's quite a spectrum of options, each with its own, you know, technical process. Now, before we delve into the specific Christian ethical lens, the lecture briefly mentions utilitarian and Kantian ethics. Why does it start there?
Well, I think those frameworks provide a helpful contrast. They represent common secular approaches to ethical decision making. Utilitarianism, as mentioned, would focus on maximizing overall happiness and minimizing suffering for everyone involved.
Okay, the greatest good kind of thing.
Exactly. Kantian ethics, on the other hand, emphasizes the importance of individual autonomy, treating people as ends in themselves, and adhering to universalizable moral principles. So by briefly touching on these, the lecture kind of sets the stage for why a Christian ethical approach, according to its perspective, needs additional and distinct considerations.
Okay, yeah, that makes the transition clearer. So let's get to the heart of it. The Christian moral parameters outlined in the lecture, drawing on Scott Ray's work. The first one is medical technology as a gift. What's the real significance of framing it that way?
Well, the lecture highlights the Christian understanding that humans, being created in God's image, are inherently creative beings,
mm-hmm.
right? So the development of these medical technologies can be seen as an expression of that God-given creativity, a kind of gift.
Mm-hmm.
However, and this is a really critical point, just because we have the technological capability to do something doesn't automatically make it morally sound.
Right.
The lecture emphasizes the absolute necessity of moral discernment in how we choose to use these powerful tools.
Right. The classic just because we can doesn't mean we should principle.
Okay.
The second parameter is procreation within heterosexual monogamous marriage. Now, this seems pretty fundamental to a traditional Christian viewpoint, but how does it specifically relate to the ethics of reproductive technologies?
The lecture presents this as a foundational principle, locating the ideal context for procreation within the traditional understanding of marriage in Christian teaching. It does acknowledge that the broader ethics of sexuality is a separate discussion, so the focus here is really on how these technologies intersect with this established view of where and how children are ideally brought into the world, according to this perspective.
Gotcha. And then we come to a really central tenet, the sanctity of life and the moral status of the unborn. We've touched on this in other deep dives, particularly when discussing abortion. How does this principle shape the Christian ethical perspective on these technologies?
Yeah, this is a cornerstone. The lecture reiterates the deeply held Christian belief in the inherent sacredness of all human life, based on the idea that humans are made in God's image, as Genesis describes. This sanctity of life principle, according to the lecture, extends to the unborn right from conception. Therefore, Any reproductive technology must be carefully evaluated in terms of its implications for the moral status and well-being of any resulting embryos or fetuses. It makes you think about each stage of life having, well, inherent value.
Absolutely. That principle carries a lot of weight when we consider some of these technologies, for sure. The fourth parameter mentioned is adoption as an important alternative. Why does the lecture specifically emphasize this?
The lecture presents adoption as a really positive and morally sound option for couples who are facing difficulties conceiving biologically. It's framed as a way to offer love and a stable home to children who are already in need.
Right.
And importantly, the lecture stresses that children, whether they are born to a couple or adopted, are seen as a gift from God. Adoption isn't presented as, like, a second best option, but is a truly redemptive and commendable choice in its own right.
And the final parameter from Scott Ray mentioned is the virtue of faith. This seems to speak to the emotional and spiritual journey that often accompanies infertility. It strikes me that this isn't just about religious conviction either. I mean, the emotional toll of repeated failed attempts at conception, regardless of one's faith, must be immense. It makes you wonder about the psychological wisdom in knowing when maybe to shift focus.
That's a really insightful point, yeah. The lecture highlights that infertility can be a profound trial of faith for couples, an opportunity to trust in God's plan, even when their deepest desires aren't being fulfilled in the way they hoped. The story shared about the pastor and his wife, who chose not to pursue biological children or adoption, and instead dedicated themselves to other forms of ministry. Well, that beautifully illustrates this idea of surrendering to God's will and finding purpose in different paths. It brings up that incredibly personal question of when to perhaps step back from pursuing biological children through these technologies and consider other avenues.
Yeah, that's such a delicate and often heartbreaking decision for couples. Now, the lecture also brings in some specific Roman Catholic theological distinctions. Why is it important for the lecture to include these perspectives?
Well, while the main focus is on broader Christian ethics, the lecture highlights that Roman Catholic theology offers some very specific viewpoints that are worth considering, even if they aren't universally held by, say, all Protestant denominations.
Okay.
The first key distinction mentioned is the unity between sex and procreation. Can you elaborate a bit on what that entails?
Certainly. In the Catholic tradition, there's a strong emphasis on the idea that the marital act, you know, sex within marriage, should always remain open to the possibility of procreation. This doesn't mean that every single time intercourse happens, it must be intended to result in a child. But it does imply an intrinsic connection between the two purposes of marital union, the unitive and the procreative. Consequently, artificial means of contraception, with the exception of natural family planning methods, like the rhythm method, are generally not permitted because they're seen as separating these two inherent aspects.
Okay, separating the unitive and procreative. And the second key Catholic distinction relates to the proper role of technology in procreation. How does that perspective differ?
Well, the Catholic view, as presented here, is that medical technology can ethically be used to assist the natural act of intercourse in achieving procreation, but it should not replace that act.
Assist versus replace.
Exactly. This distinction implies limitations on certain reproductive technologies that bypass the natural marital act altogether, like IVF, for instance, in some interpretations.
Right. These Catholic perspectives certainly offer a more detailed, maybe specific, framework for evaluating these technologies compared to some of the broader principles discussed within general Protestant ethics. Now, shifting our focus slightly, the lecture then moves on to discuss some of the specific moral issues that arise directly from the use of these reproductive technologies themselves. The first one mentioned is the risk of high numbers of multiples. Why is this considered such a significant ethical concern?
Well, as the lecture points out, procedures like IUI, IVF, and GIFT, particularly when they're combined with ovulation-stimulating drugs, which, just to briefly explain, are medications often used to encourage the release of multiple eggs, increasing the likelihood of twins or triplets or even more.
Right, to boost the chances.
Exactly. They can significantly increase the chances of multiple pregnancies. And while, you know, some might initially see this as a faster way to build a family, it carries substantial risks. We're talking risks for both the mother and the babies, including higher rates of premature birth, low birth weight, and tragically, even infant mortality. Wow, that really puts the desire for a baby into a stark perspective when you consider the potential dangers. It's not just about fulfilling a dream. There are significant health realities to weigh.
Absolutely. It's a serious consideration. And this increased risk of multiples leads directly to the next ethical issue. The problem of unused embryos, particularly in the context of IVF. This seems to be one of the most ethically complex aspects of these technologies.
Oh, it truly is. The lecture explains that IVF often involves creating multiple embryos, you know, partly for practical reasons, to increase the likelihood of a successful pregnancy.
Right, to improve the odds.
Yeah. But then, once the couple achieves their desired family size, there are often remaining viable embryos left in cryopreservation, in cold storage. And this brings up the incredibly difficult question of what is morally permissible to do with these embryos. The lecture outlines several potential fates. They could be destroyed, they could be donated to other infertile couples, kept in indefinite storage, or, controversially, used for research purposes, like stem cell research. Each of these options carries its own significant set of ethical considerations.
Yeah, there's no easy answer there. The lecture even mentions what it calls a financially risky solution, intentionally creating only the number of embryos that the couple is willing and able to carry to term. This really highlights the inherent tension between the desire for a successful pregnancy and the moral status accorded to the embryos created in the process.
Definitely. And the anecdote shared in the lecture about the Christian couple who made the decision to implant all the embryos created, even facing the possibility of a very large family. Well, that powerfully illustrates the weight of the sanctity of life principle for some individuals. The lecturer describes this as a tentative recommendation, and it's important to recognize, as the lecturer points out, that there isn't a universal consensus on this approach, even among those who hold a strong pro-life stance. Some might question the ethical permissibility of IVF itself from this perspective.
Right.
It's interesting that the lecture highlights the sanctity of life extending to the unborn. But what does that practically mean for these frozen embryos? I mean, is there a hierarchy of sanctity in different stages of development? The lecture touches on destruction, donation. Are these all viewed equally under this principle? That seems complicated.
Those are precisely the kinds of challenging questions that arise. And the lecture doesn't necessarily provide definitive answers for everyone, but lays out the dilemma. It then turns its attention to surrogate motherhood, stating that it presents far more problematic ethical considerations. What are the primary concerns raised here?
Okay, several ethical arguments against surrogate motherhood are presented. One major concern revolves around the potential for exploitation, particularly in cases of paid surrogacy. There's a fear that babies could be commodified, turned into merchandise, essentially. Mm. This is often contrasted with instances of surrogacy within close family relationships where, presumably, financial incentives aren't the primary motivator. Another argument suggests that surrogacy can inadvertently normalize, or even, as the lecture puts it, turn into a virtue, the idea of a mother intentionally detaching emotionally from the child she is carrying, a kind of human incubator concept, which is generally viewed as undesirable in other contexts of pregnancy.
That's a complex psychological point. The lecture also points out the practical difficulties and potential for conflict that can emerge, right? Like surrogates changing their minds and wanting to keep the child.
Exactly. Leading to complex legal and deeply emotional battles for everyone involved. And fundamentally, there's the complex question of the rights of the surrogate mother herself in relation to the child she carries. It's not just about the intended parents and the child. The well-being and rights of the woman acting as the surrogate are crucial ethical considerations that are often difficult to navigate.
Yeah.
The lecture even mentions the potential for long-lasting negative emotional consequences for the surrogate, even when she willingly relinquishes the child after birth.
These are indeed significant ethical hurdles with no easy solutions, it sounds like. The lecture concludes by posing several concluding questions for us to reflect upon. The first revisits that Catholic perspective on the unity of sex and procreation. Why do you think the lecture circles back to this at the end?
It seems to encourage us to consider whether this traditional Catholic viewpoint, emphasizing the inherent connection between the marital act and procreation, might offer valuable insights into the ethical dilemmas presented by reproductive technologies that intentionally separate these aspects. It prompts us to ask whether there's wisdom in that perspective when we evaluate these modern advancements. And it also asks that fundamental question, should married couples always be open to the possibility of conception?
That's a big question. And then, quite interestingly, the lecture brings up the significant shift in evangelical views on birth control since the 1960s. What's the relevance of this historical comparison in this context?
Well, this historical shift highlights a crucial point. Our moral compass isn't static. It's influenced by cultural norms and technological advancements. So when we consider reproductive technologies today, are we critically examining them, or are we potentially becoming desensitized to ethical concerns over time, just as the lecture suggests happened with birth control?
So it's a warning about cultural acclimation.
Exactly. It's a fascinating and somewhat sobering point about how cultural acclimation can shape our moral perceptions. The initial strong opposition to the birth control pill within the evangelical community, contrasted with its widespread acceptance today, really underscores how we can become accustomed to things and perhaps lose sight of initial ethical reservations. The bikini analogy used in the lecture further illustrates this idea of shifting societal norms.
Right, the bikini analogy.
Yeah, it really makes you wonder what ethical considerations we might be overlooking or becoming desensitized to in our current context regarding reproductive technologies.
It certainly encourages a critical examination of our own assumptions and how societal norms might be influencing our ethical frameworks, maybe without us even realizing it. The lecture also raises important questions about the financial and emotional limits of pursuing fertility treatments and when adoption might represent a more ethically sound path.
Yes, it really pushes us to consider the practical realities and whether the intense desire for a biological child might sometimes overshadow other ethically responsible options, like providing a loving home for a child in need through adoption. It also prompts us to think about when the financial and emotional costs of these treatments might become excessively burdensome, perhaps indicating that a different path should be prayerfully considered from the lecture's perspective.
Mm-hmm. Finally, the lecture poses a really thought-provoking question about whether societal views of children have evolved from seeing them primarily as a blessing to perhaps a burden or even an entitlement. How might this shift in perspective relate to our attitudes towards reproductive technologies?
This is a really insightful point to end on, I think. The lecture suggests that our fundamental underlying attitudes towards children can profoundly influence how we view and approach reproductive technologies. If children are increasingly seen as a burden, illustrated by that stark traffic accident analogy mentioned from a particular pro-choice perspective, or conversely, as an entitlement that must be obtained at any cost, this can significantly impact our ethical evaluations of these technologies.
Right. It changes the whole frame.
It really does. It challenges us to deeply examine our core values concerning life and the nature of family.
So to bring this deep dive to a close, we've explored a range of crucial ethical considerations regarding reproductive technologies, all stemming from the framework presented in this lecture. These include understanding technology as a gift requiring careful moral judgment, the traditional emphasis on procreation within heterosexual marriage, the foundational principle of the sanctity of life, the significant alternative of adoption, the role of faith in navigating infertility, and the specific ethical challenges raised by multiple pregnancies, the fate of unused embryos, and the complexities of surrogate motherhood.
Right.
And we've also considered different perspectives, including those specific Roman Catholic viewpoints and the influence of evolving societal norms.
Exactly. It's a complex landscape, for sure, with deeply held beliefs and varying perspectives. For you, our listener, who shared this important material with us, we sincerely hope this deep dive has provided a clear understanding of the key ethical considerations presented in this lecture on reproductive technologies. As you continue to reflect on this topic, we leave you with this final thought. Consider deeply how your own understanding of the inherent value of human life, the intended purpose of technology in our world, and the very essence of what constitutes a family shapes your personal perspective on these rapidly advancing and profoundly personal issues. It's a conversation that continues to evolve both within our individual lives and in the broader societal context.